Letters from a Midnight Wood. I woke with a start. The morning had not yet ripened, and shadows still lingered behind the bedroom door and windowsill. My hands were outstretched before me, reaching blindly out to where I thought Hyacinth stood. My lips were parted in a silent scream, and my eyes were still wide at the sight of his blood-stained teeth. When my dream world at last gave way to the real one, I realized that Hyacinth was nothing more than my bedpost. I looked quickly to where Vulfril slept, certain that I had stirred him. But he did not move, and his breathing stayed even. A deep cold had settled into my bones, and I was shaking so hard that I could barely press my hands together. Something terrible had happened in the Kingdom of Back. Even as I fought to remember it, I felt the horror of the vision fading away, the sharp edges softening. The princess in the tower had my face, formed by my imagination. Had I even seen any of it? Hyacinth was my guardian, and surely that meant he could not have betrayed me. But something seemed different about the haze in my mind this morning, like a hand had reached into my thoughts and stirred them, turning the clear waters murky, like someone else had curled inside. I closed my eyes and let myself reach for the final moments of my dream. The queen, the champion, the princess. Hyacinth was not the princeling of the Kingdom of Back. He had instead destroyed the kingdom, and I had been the one who'd helped him.
Are you feeling well, Nanril?
I jumped at Vulfril's voice. When I looked at him, his eyes were staring, unblinking, back at me.
I did not mean to wake you, I answered.
I had a strange dream, Vulfril said.
A thread of fear coiled through me and tightened.
What happened in it?
I asked.
I was in a city. It was burning to the ground. The fire nipped at my skin and the smoke blinded my eyes.
A city? Lille?
No.
His voice was flat.
A city with no name.
It was Hyacinth's doing, this dream of his. I could feel his presence in the spaces between my brother's words, teeth sinking into the air. I waited for Vulfril to speak again. When he just rolled away and closed his eyes, I turned on my side and stared at the strengthening light peeking in from the window. Hyacinth was not the kingdom's princeling. It meant that his wish to reclaim his birthright and his throne, to reunite with his sister, was also a lie. What was his true wish, then? He had bargained with me. To what end? I thought of the hunger in his eyes at the top of the tower, all he had done and all he'd had me do. He had wanted to devour the princess at the top of the castle. My gaze returned to the fragile, curled form of my brother, his chest rising and falling in a gentle rhythm. A thought began to take shape. Had Hyacinth not once told me that the young prince was never found? That the Queen of the Night never knew what happened to her child? Hyacinth was not the kingdom's princeling, but someone was. And if Hyacinth had wanted all along to devour the princess, perhaps he now hungered for the princeling, too. Perhaps it was the reason Vulfril pricked his finger on the nightflower. The reason for his illnesses. The reason for his strange dreams, the faraway look in his eyes. Most of all, perhaps it was the reason for Hyacinth's promise to fulfill my wish. The air around me felt too thin now. I shifted, dizzy from the truth. Vulfril was the young princeling of the Kingdom of Back. And perhaps everything Hyacinth had done was in order to find a way to claim Vulfril's soul in the same way he had claimed the princess.
You can be remembered,
if he is forgotten. So let me take him away, Fräulein.
I heard the words whispered as clearly as if he were standing beside me. Deep in a corner of my mind, Hyacinth blinked in the dark, stirred, and smiled. As we left Lille for Amsterdam, then Rotterdam, then the Austrian Netherlands, strange things started to happen. Snow fell during one of our concerts on a sunny afternoon. News came from London that an unusual plague had broken out in England's countryside. At the same time, we began to hear reports of vicious attacks across France, of man-eating wolf dogs prowling the mountain paths near Périgord.
Herr von Grimm said the beast of Gévaudan has a tail as long as I am tall,
Wuffrel said, knees on his chair as we ate a supper of lentil soup and spätzle. He stretched his arms out.
And twice the rows of teeth of any wolf!
Mama scolded him to sit down properly, while Papa chuckled.
And what makes you believe everything Herr von Grimm has to say?
He asked. Wuffrel brightened, hungry to coax more smiles out of our father.
Well, he said I knew more at my age than most Kapellmeisters in Europe.
He glanced at me.
He said Nannerl had the finest execution on the harpsichord. Isn't that all truth?
I looked up at my brother's praise. His eyes darted to me for an instant before flickering away. He was curious about my mood lately, my quiet spells and faraway expressions. This was his way of reaching out to me. I gave him a careful, practiced expression of gratitude. You are very kind, Wuffrel, I said to him.
Thank you.
Wuffrel's joy dampened at my response. He knew it was the kind of polite answer I gave to the nobility we played for whenever I wanted to leave a good impression. He stared at me, searching for the truth beneath my trained response, but I just looked away from him and back to my plate. Perhaps he thought I was still angry with him because of my music, and perhaps I was. But I could not look at him without remembering what had happened in the kingdom and what Hyacinth might want with him. Papa sensed none of this odd tension between us. He laughed genuinely. Few things pleased him more than a reminder of courts impressed by our performances, and Herr von Grimm had indeed said those words when we'd played for the Prince of Conti in Paris during an afternoon tea. Mama paused to meet our father's eye. It might not be a bad plan to avoid the mountain paths, she said meaningfully to him. Papa waved a nonchalant hand as he stirred his soup.
Nothing more than tales exaggerated by panicked witnesses, no doubt. There have been no reports from around Paris.
Louis XV himself has put a bounty on any wolf corpse brought into him, Mama said.
If the king fears this beast, then perhaps we should as well.
Beast.
Papa said the word through a twisting mouth, his distaste for the imaginary souring his good mood.
There is no such thing as a beast.
I ate quietly. The conversation swirled around me like the waters of a murky lake, and my family smeared into distortion. None of us had said another word about my music, published as a birthday present for the Prince of Orange. It was possible that my father had already forgotten all about it, that he had been paid his coin and promptly tucked my music away in some dusty corner of his mind. And yet, I could feel the weight of this betrayal hanging over the dinner table like a storm. Everyone knew. Sometimes I waited for my father's punishment to come, for him to finally confront me one day about my compositions and toss them into the fire like I'd always feared. I would have preferred that over this silence, this dismissal of what I'd written. The thought sent such a chill through my bones that I shivered in the warm room, trying to stop my lips from snarling into a grimace. I knew very well who was killing the people of Périgord and Gévaudan,
I had seen his form in my dreams last night, prowling through tall grasses. It was not a wolf dog, but a fairy creature, with a splitting grin and yellow eyes, hungry for more flesh now that I had finally helped him get a taste. What I did not know was what I now wished. A part of me needed to return to the kingdom of Back to set right what I had done wrong. The Queen of the Night had tried to warn me, yet I had not believed her. The King's Champion had called out for me to come back, and yet I had fought him an ogre and fled. The River Guardian had tried to keep me out, and yet I had helped a monster. I had to fix what I'd done. But a part of me still yearned for my wish, feared that I had lost it forever. Could I be remembered without Hyacinth's help? Was I now doomed to be forgotten if I did not continue along with Hyacinth's demands? I want what is mine, I'd told him. I still did. And a part of myself that frightened me, a whisper in the shadows, a figure waiting in the woods, wanted to see my brother walk into the air. He would turn lighter and lighter until you could barely make out his shape, and when you finally blinked, he would be gone. Weeks later, we finally returned to Salzburg. I leaned out of our carriage to admire the Geitodgasse as we passed through it, even though Sebastian and Mama told me to sit properly. The touch of the air, the smells that came with late autumn, the old wrought iron signs that hung over the storefronts. It was all still there, in exactly the same spots they'd been when we'd first left years ago. For a moment, I forgot all about Hyacinth and my music, and let myself indulge in the returning familiarity of this place. My heart hung on a hook, raw with anticipation, as we drew close to the row where our flat would be. Here was home. Here, also, might be a letter from Johann, written and addressed to me. I tried to conjure up his hopeful face in my mind, the way we had talked and laughed in my old dream. What might he say in a letter? Was he still traveling through Europe, visiting universities? Did he have plans to come to Austria? It didn't matter to me. All I knew was that, if his letters had arrived, I needed to get to them before my parents did. Beside me, Wufferl sensed my tenseness and turned his face up to study mine. In the light, I saw the first hints of his adolescent cheekbones. How quickly he had turned 12. How swiftly I had turned 16. We did not have many years left together now. I looked nervously away from him and back to the street. The feel of his eyes on me seeped through my back. Papa hopped out of the carriage when it had just barely come to a stop. Down by the entrance to our building stood Herr Hagenauer, our landlord, and he beamed as Papa came up to him to close his hands in a hearty shake. There was a hasty conversation about the rent, about giving us more time to pay for the months we'd been gone. I waited until Wolfril slid off his seat to follow our father before I reached out to touch my mother's arm. Mama, please, I whispered, my gaze darting to where Papa and Herr Hagenauer were chatting loudly. She glanced back at me. Can you get our mail and see if there is any for me? Her brows lifted in surprise. Just for you, Nannerl, she knew to whisper it. I flushed hot and hoped no one else could see it. Yes, Mama, I murmured. She frowned. And from whom? His name is Johann. I swallowed, suddenly unsure whether Mama would keep a secret like this for me. He attended one of our concerts and said he wanted to write with his best wishes. My words trailed off under my mother's stern gaze. A boy, she murmured. And does your father know who Johann is? He did not like him very much. Please, Mama, I whispered, turning my eyes down.
He is writing from Frankfurt. I don't know what she saw in my face to make her take pity on me. Perhaps my expression triggered for her memories of long ago, of an age when she was not yet married. Whatever the reason, she sighed, shook her head, and stepped off the carriage, holding her hand out to take Sebastian's outstretched one. "I will see to it," she said over her shoulder to me. And sure enough, by the time we reached our flat with our luggage stacked around the door, and Papa had stepped out in a hurry to the Archbishop's Court, Mama found me alone in the bedchamber and handed me 3 brown envelopes, written in a curling script. I glanced up at her, relieved, but she did not speak. Instead, she squeezed my shoulder once, then left the room and quietly closed the door. Outside, the muffled sounds of Wulfril playing the clavier wafted to me. He would be preoccupied for a while yet, so much had he missed his instrument. My attention shifted back to the envelopes in my hand. I sat with my back to the door, so that I could stop anyone who might want to come into the room, then fluffed my skirts out around me and pushed a finger underneath the first envelope's flap. The wax seal broke with a single pop. The handwriting on the letter inside matched the script on the envelope itself, curling and beautiful, the writing of a cultured boy, and I found myself smiling as I read it.
To my Fräulein Mozart. Do you know, when I returned home to Frankfurt, the very first thing I did was sketch what I remembered of you. I am sketching a great deal. I'm afraid my art is not as miraculous as yours, but I am doing it all the same. Drawing, just as you may be composing. My father has decided to send me to law school here in Frankfurt. I'd wanted to find a university farther away, but staying in Germany will not be so bad. And I can hope to receive letters from you more frequently. I think of you often. Sometimes I imagine I will catch you standing outside our local bakery shop, or out in the square, just like I had seen you that day in London. But then I suppose I am just a simple young man with optimistic thoughts. Please tell me if you'll come to perform in Frankfurt again. I will wait for you. Until we meet again, I will be your hopeful, Johann.
I was glad that no one was here to see the blush on my face, but I touched my cheeks and did not feel ashamed of it. I folded the letter and reached for the second. Outside, Wulfril finished playing one minuet and began another, one I'd never heard before. Perhaps he was making it up as he went. I didn't dwell on it as I eagerly began to read Johann's next letter.
To my Fräulein Mozart. You may not know it, but word has reached Frankfurt that you and your family have taken the Dutch completely by surprise and that they cannot believe their good fortune. I heard of this in passing on the street. Think, Nonneril, that you have as a young woman already earned such popularity as to be mentioned by strangers in passing. I am more astonished and impressed by you than anyone I've ever met. I am writing a poem. I have discovered that my writing skills are quite a bit stronger than my painting. I am relieved that you have never seen my art. I should be embarrassed. If you are ever in Frankfurt, as you know, I will always be at leisure to see you. Johann.
I leaned my head back against the door and closed my eyes. Johann could not know that anything he heard on the streets about me was always solely in reference to my brother. Still, the brightness leaking from his words warmed me. The dream I'd once had of us sitting under a night sky now came back to me, as fully formed as if it had really happened. I let myself savor it until I heard Wulfril finish his second minuet and begin playing a third. A melancholy piece in a minor key. Then I broke the wax seal on the third letter and began to read. I flung it away in fright. A soft cry escaped from my lips.
My darling Fräulein,
You have helped me. A bargain is a bargain. Come to me in Vienna, and I shall take you to the ball. There was no signature, but there did not need to be. This was not a letter from Frankfurt. This came from a forest under moonlight. The wildness in Hyacinth's voice was here in his words, in every jagged, hurried line. Even though I had never seen his handwriting before, I recognized it. Outside, Wuffrel's minuet lifted in a crescendo. The notes tumbled after one another, beads on a glass counter. Somewhere in my mind echoed a laugh, a sound of the night. I took the letters and put them carefully back in their envelopes. Then I hid them in my trunk underneath a pile of clothes. Later, I would burn them all. Hyacinth was calling me back.